You're listening to West Virginia Morning at 7:33. I'm Beneduccio. After more than a week since a chemical spill on the Elk River, some West Virginia American Water customers are still questioning the quality of the water running out of their taps. Governor Tomlin announced his legislation yesterday intended to prevent future chemical spills and protect the water quality for West Virginians. Ashton Mara reports.
Make no mistake, the discharge of chemicals or other contaminants is unacceptable. And neither I nor anyone standing here with me today will tolerate it in West Virginia.
Governor Tomlin thanked the people of West Virginia for their patience as he and emergency officials worked to restore water service to more than 300,000 West Virginians. At a press conference, Tomlin explained the legislation he will introduce to lawmakers in order to prevent such an accident from happening again.
This legislation will address currently unregulated tanks. Those located in areas of critical concern near our public water supply and distribution systems. This proposed legislation will assure that all above-ground storage tanks are built and maintained consistent with required safety standards.
Drafted with the help of the Department of Environmental Protection, the bill has multiple facets. It will require all public water systems to have written plans in place to deal with any contamination possible near their intake sites. It empowers the DEP to implement an above-ground regulatory program, inspecting storage tanks and secondary containment systems. Companies storing chemicals above ground will be required to self-report the location of all of their tanks and provide an annual written report on any changes made to their storage locations. DEP Secretary Randy Huffman says while all of the aspects of the bill will help ensure the future safety of the state's water, it's the annual certifications done by engineers that will be the most helpful for the department.
The biggest thing is that we are looking for an annual certification by a registered professional engineer that the tanks and the secondary containment have all been tested and that they meet the certification or meet the requirements as outlined in the bill. That's huge. That would have prevented this incident last week.
Hoffman says the additional inspectors or equipment needed to meet the requirements of the bill will likely be paid for through fees the department will collect from the chemical industry, but those will be set in legislative rulemaking rather than in law. Senate President Jeff Kessler says as his chamber moves forward with both the governor's and the Senate's versions of regulations, they will focus on three major aspects: identifying the chemical inventory, certifying that inventory is being stored in a safe manner, and notifying the public and public officials of where these chemicals are located so emergency plans can be put in place.
My pledge to you, I see many of my senators out there here today, never again. Never again.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
After celebrating Martin Luther King Jr. Day at the Capitol, the House of Delegates went to work voting on a littering bill and honoring the life of a former member of the House who passed away recently. Aaron Payne reports.
House Bill 4014 will increase the criminal penalties for littering. Part of the bill divides offenses into three categories based on quantity, the smallest category being less than 100 pounds or 27 cubic feet in length. The punishment for that category has been increased to a $250 minimum fine or, in the discretion of the court, community services of no less than 24 hours to 100 hours or both. The bill would also double the penalty for any person convicted of a second or subsequent violation. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Tim Manchin says the committee wanted to focus on littering so that West Virginia's natural beauty can remain untarnished by waste.
Every year when the leaves come off of the trees and most of the greenery goes away, what we see when we drive around on our highways are things that our public has left behind that they ought to be taking home with them. And I think that's what the real need is I think we see it more so this time of year. You can't drive down the highway without seeing tax dollars being spent to pick up litter along our highways, and it's just an absolute shame. And I think we just felt that the fines and the penalties at this point are not significant enough to deter people from doing that, and we needed to increase that and try to bring some awareness to it.
The bill passed unanimously and now moves on to the Senate. The House also unanimously passed House Resolution 5, establishing a memorial to the former delegate from Webster County, Joseph Talbot, who passed away recently. With Talbot's family in attendance for the floor session, members of the House, including Speaker Miley, took the opportunity to remember the life of their former colleague.
The one thing that strikes me about Joe Talbot, among the other things that have been said, is that he was probably the most intellectually honest person I've served with. He didn't let himself be influenced by the politically popular issue of the day, but rather the deep-seated convictions and beliefs he held for fairness to everybody. He will be missed.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:39.
The National Weather Service has a winter storm warning in effect until 1 o'clock tomorrow morning for nearly the entire state, as heavy snow and low wind chill factors could leave 3 to 8 inches of snow and frigid conditions around the state. There's also a winter weather advisory until 1 o'clock tomorrow morning for the Ohio River counties, where snow accumulations of 2 to 4 inches could fall in those areas. As a result of the weather, all county schools across the state have closed now. In addition to that, Wood County Christian School, Charleston Catholic High and Sacred Heart Grade Schools, Mountaineer Montessori School in Charleston, the Charleston Montessori School, the Kanawha Valley Community and Technical College, and WVU Tech and Bridgemont Community and Technical College in Montgomery are all closed this morning. Shepherd University will open at 11 o'clock this morning for classes, and Potomac State College of WVU and Kaiser will begin classes at 11:30 this morning. The WV511 Traffic Information Center is reporting a major vehicle accident on westbound I-64 at mile marker 127, where two westbound lanes are closed. Please use caution in those areas this morning. Support for legislative coverage is provided by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvuaflcio.org. Support for NPR comes from the Kresge Foundation, expanding opportunities in American cities at kresge.org.
The West Virginia State Legislature is moving quickly to adopt regulations on chemical storage facilities in the state. But the president of environmental consulting firm Downstream Strategies says it's only a first step towards spill prevention. A chemical spill into the Elk River not only prevented 300,000 West Virginians from using water for several days, but it put other communities from nearby states on alert, including downstream cities like Cincinnati. The spills created an environment of anxiety and frustration for residents, but it's also brought up red flags to people like Evan Hansen, president of Downstream Strategies.
Our state leaders need to set a new tone in which it's their expectation that the DEP holds all industries, including those in the coal industry, fully and consistently accountable for meeting their permits.
Hansen says new regulations are good, but he questions how well they will be enforced with an understaffed DEP. As a state agency, the DEP faces budget cuts.
It needs more funds and needs more staff. And they need to not just have those funds and have that staff, but they need to be directed that they're to use those funds and use those new staff to perform more inspections and to enforce the permits. They need to better prioritize their inspections, because no matter how many inspectors they have, they're not going to be able to be everywhere. And one way to prioritize their inspections is to make sure that those sites that store the most hazardous materials in the largest quantities in the most sensitive locations are inspected first and frequently.
Hansen says in West Virginia, chemical storage facilities usually operate under what he calls general permits from the State Department of Environmental Protection. These include stormwater permits that do not necessarily require public comment. Hansen says that needs to change.
General permits are pre-written permits that the DEP updates every 5 years for categories of sites. The permit at issue here for Freedom Industries is a general permit written for industrial sites that have stormwater discharges. To get covered under that permit, Freedom Industries does what's called get a registration. they provide some information to the DEP about what they're going to do on site to prevent discharges of pollution and contamination of groundwater. But essentially, the terms and conditions of the permit are pre-written, and they simply get a registration. General permits only undergo public notice and comment when DEP writes the general permit, not when facilities register under the general permit.
Hansen adds individual permits are site-specific with writing and considerations included that specifically consider the site itself.
There's no public notice and comment for general permits. And that's needed for these facilities so that people who live in the area and are potentially affected by spills have a chance to weigh in and provide feedback during the permitting process.
Every coal mine, every power plant, and larger wastewater treatment plants are regulated under these more stringent permits, according to Hansen, but not at a place like the Freedom site.
The actions that have occurred at Freedom Industries strongly suggest that it is totally inappropriate for them to be granted coverage under a general permit due to the large amounts of harmful chemicals stored at those facilities.
Downstream Strategies worked on a report called The Freedom Industries Spill, Lessons Learned and Needed Reforms. And Downstream is actually studying another spill. Hansen says in Morgantown, a spill occurred at a site that stores chemicals used in the hydraulic fracturing process. Some material spilled into a tributary of the Monongahela River. He says Downstream contacted the spill hotline at the Department of Environmental Protection, and Downstream's investigation is ongoing as to what happened. The West Virginia Schools for the Deaf and Blind in Romney have been under scrutiny over the past 3 years. As a result, the school's administration created a first-ever 10-year master plan, upgraded the curriculum to better meet state standards, and it's providing more services to counties across the state. As Cecilia Mason reports, one new program gives blind, deaf, and hard-of-hearing students from various counties a chance to attend the schools on a temporary basis.
3 years ago, the West Virginia Board of Education hired Dr. Lynn Boyer as superintendent of the schools for deaf and blind. She was tasked with determining the role the schools play in meeting today's educational needs.
Our intention has been, through a lot of new projects and initiatives since I've been here, is to what I call demystify the schools and help the rest of the state to see what we do here that can be helpful to them in educating children who are deaf or who are blind.
A new program started at the beginning of this school year offers deaf, hard of hearing, blind, and low vision students from across the state the opportunity to spend time on the Romney campus. The schools bring the students by bus once a month for a week so they can study and take advantage of the specialized instruction that's available.
So that it's really a full week immersion, if you will, in a culture that really provides to them role models in some ways, with teachers, with dorm personnel, and certainly with peers who have some of their same challenges.
Okay, so what would a shotgun hold? What's inside the shotgun?
I know.
Bullets.
Bullets, very good. So ammunition is like bullets. Okay, but what else can a magazine be?
Something you read.
Something you read, right. What about ineffective?
Patty Myers is the teacher who works with the students during the week they spend on campus. The trip to Romney is part of the students' individual education plan, which is put together by counties to address meeting the needs of students with special challenges. Deaf, hard of hearing, blind, and low vision students come to Romney on Sunday and bring their regular classroom work so they don't fall behind in their studies.
Now, while they're with me, we are addressing all that curriculum. But we're also looking at various strategies, various approaches, some aids that they can use when they go back to their county to continue using in their typical classrooms. It gives them better access to their print materials. And then our students who are deaf or hard of hearing, we make sure they get additional ASL, American Sign Language, and we give them a lot of study techniques as well to use.
One goal is providing services that counties can't because there aren't experts available to offer them. Myers says one example is teaching students how to navigate around town.
We have several counties who find it very difficult to find orientation mobility specialists. We only have like 8 in the state who can offer that provide that service. So by them coming here, we can make sure they get that on a monthly basis.
Staying on campus for a week also gives the students an opportunity to interact with adults and other children who are like them. Myers says they seem to enjoy the experience.
This group of students, it's just been phenomenal to watch what they do. And they come here each month already established friendships. From the first month till now, you know, we get requests, I want to share a room with so-and-so, because they have just made that close of friends. And they do work very hard with their county core curriculum. We even do 90 minutes every evening of homework so that they can spend time with their friends once a month. And that's what makes it so nice. It's just been phenomenal.
The Schools for Deaf and Blind has offered the program since September, and Superintendent Lynn Boyer says anywhere from 7 to 15 students each month have participated. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. Our producer is Robert Powell. From Morgantown, I'm Beneduccio. Good morning.